Welcome to Work from the Inside Out, a podcast that highlights real-life stories, practical strategies, and best practices for transitioning your career from unhappiness and dissatisfaction to fulfillment, meaning, and joy. Now here is your host, career and executive coach, Tammy Guler-Loeb.
Hey, everybody. I am delighted to introduce today's guest, Katie McDonald. Over two decades ago, the demands of Katie McDonald's corporate career occupied her every waking moment. She was left feeling depleted and depressed, suffering from spiraling mental and physical health crises that threatened her life. Left with no choice but to transform her body-mind relationship, Katie abandoned her corporate job and finally started applying her knowledge of self-care, alternative health, and plant-based nutrition. Since then, Katie has been on a revitalizing journey of lifelong self-care. Fully recovered from years of self-neglect, Katie now helps fellow doers embrace self-care so they can do more and be more while leading healthier, more intentional, and more nourished lives. Katie leads with tough love to inspire, empower, and challenge audiences. She dispels the destructive myth that self-care is an obstacle to productivity and teaches that self-care is, in fact, a tool to create a more powerful and impactful legacy. Please join me in welcoming Katie McDonald. Welcome, Katie.
Thank you. It's so lovely to be here.
I'm so happy to have you here, and thank you for joining us from your home office in Providence, Rhode Island. So, Katie, as you know, on Work from the Inside Out, we love to begin at the beginning. So take us back to some of those formative years and tell us, how did they inform or not where you are today?
So I was a baby. I am the baby of four. And it was really clear I had to work hard to make my mark. Mm. It's easy to be forgotten and invisible at that point. Mm. And one of the ways that I did that, when it was really clear I wasn't going to be the smartest, the prettiest, the whatever, it's like, what is it that I can do? And what I knew I could do is work hard. From the very beginning, I was a doer, and I always applied that to my academics, even to my social life, busy, and really laid the course for the illness that awaited me, and also the recovery, the really the human doing part. I had down. It was the only lever I knew to pull in the early years. And throughout my life, and even now, it's that lever is like, pull me whenever life feels challenging. Yeah. It's like, it's where I go, and I have to pull back and go inside before that I start doing the familiar. So there was a lot of chaos. And one of the ways that I addressed it is to try to create order. Mm. And I did it through little simple ways, like I'd organize my bedroom and I'd organize a drawer. And what I found is I didn't know how to manage the inside. And so I learned to manage the outside very skillfully.
Was that something that you would get a lot of positive reinforcement about? Like, oh, look at what she's accomplished, or look at what she's doing. Or, you know, I could see as a kid, if you were getting things done, that you'd get, you know, a pat on the head, or, you know, a pat on the back, or like, well done, you know, Katie, well done, you know, whether that was really encouraged too.
You know, it was definitely role modeled. My father grew up in Newark, and he was the first to go to college, and he was determined to build a different kind of life than the one he knew, and devoted himself fully to his career in the corporate, and then went on to become an entrepreneur and manufactured medical products. And he never rested, and really was deeply committed to his work, to community. And the currency in my family was productivity. What did you accomplish? And I don't know if it was really vocalized, but I certainly of my parents, I looked to my dad. My dad's world was more orderly, and that was calming to me. Mm. And so I really identified more fully with his path. And that was a path of constant motion and striving. And there is a dark side to that. You know, I've often talked about, I know how to survive and I know how to strive, but thriving is a whole nother thing.
Ooh, that's interesting.
And a lot of people, the way that we get out of a sense of survival, a sense of not enoughness, right? I never felt like I could ever do enough. And often I felt like I was too much. I was curious. I was quirky. I was imaginative. And it didn't really fit with the rest of my family. And so they had their own strengths and skills that I didn't happen to have, but I was putting on performances and plays. And, you know, it was the baby of four trying to get attention, trying to claim some real estate in a busy family. And so doing was something that I could look at and say, well, even as a little girl, I was writing to-do lists. As a little girl, I loved planners, really, like really obsessed about planners and time management, because it was a way, it was a measurement. I didn't know how to stop. I didn't know how to tell myself, you've done enough. Yeah. And one of the ways I did it is I'd write this exhaustive list. And then I'd watch myself cross it off with no sense of priority, but a sense of accomplishment. And that became a really, you know, a coping mechanism, but also a drug.
Yeah.
And it's a drug that is rampant in our culture now.
Yeah.
Of just, you know, how do we define ourselves? And often we're defining ourselves through a to-do list and we become human doings, but have no idea how to own human being.
Right.
What does that even mean?
Right. So in other words, you know, it's not like you're saying, oh, to-do lists are a bad thing. It's more like, when does that to-do list become, you know, the calibrator or the measure of how good you are, right?
Yeah, our identity, right? It's like it becomes this calculation for our identity. So here's the space that I'm in that I never really found in all my research about productivity and time management, there was no room for self-care. It was like, you're going to either get things done or you're going to take care of yourself. And by the way, taking care of yourself is bubble baths and bonbons. And I never saw the two together in any way. And that was really the space when I needed to heal myself, as you mentioned in the bio.
Yeah,
it was like, wait a minute, I'm never going to not love getting things done. It's who I am. It's in my DNA. It's a long hell. And I love it. Like, don't take that away from me.
Yeah.
But how can I bring in this intentional self-advocacy that doesn't seem to belong in the same conversation as productivity? And yet I think, you know, when we take care of business, when we take care of ourselves, we're better able to take care of business, that they do go hand in hand.
Well, it's interesting too, because I could see where one would even almost blend or bleed into the other, right? So you decide, well, I'm gonna get better at self-care, and then that becomes the to-do list or the right? Like you could almost turn that on its head, like, well, now I've got this whole list. I'm gonna get a massage and I'm gonna take a bubble bath and I'm going to, you know, and then sort of press yourself into a whole list of, you know, what would be the typical, you know, what we think of as self-care. You know, I'm going to learn to meditate. I'm going to meditate an hour every day. And if I don't do at least an hour every day, then I can't check that off my list.
Absolutely. I mean, Tammy, you're onto something, because really we can weaponize anything.
Right.
And that is weaponizing, you know, what starts out as a really good intention, but this is back to your work, which is our lives are directed outside in.
Right.
And my work as is yours, is like, what do I need?
Right.
We need to do internal inventory that shows deep respect for who we are, instead of referencing some outside manual or one manual that tells us what we're supposed to do. So somebody who takes care of themselves is going to do the following. Well, you know what? That may not work for you. So we need to be curious about ourselves in ways that We're not. We are fascinated by the postured lives of strangers on social media, but show very little interest in our own lives, interest in our own interests. And the relationship we have with ourselves will outlast all others. Till death do us part.
That's right.
And yet it's the relationship that we neglect, that we bring the least amount of curiosity and intention to, and we suffer as a result. Mm-hmm. And we start acting out in all these ways because we haven't done the work of getting to know ourselves in this deep, profound, and thoughtful way.
Yeah. Yeah. And even as you're saying all that, I can imagine some people listening and trying to imagine, how do I, like, well, what is the real me, right? You know, and I would say that the real me at 25 was not the same real me at 40, you know.
Right.
So it's a sort of a constant evolution and practice of what we're sourcing from within, based also on the experiences we have along the way too, and what we're learning about ourselves if we're stopping long enough just to pay attention. Right.
Yes. I mean, I have been on this journey since I was very little, literally reading The Road Less Traveled at age 10 or 11.
Oh my gosh.
Trying to figure myself out. The world didn't make sense to me. And more importantly, I didn't make sense in the world. And so I've been on this journey for a long time, and I can say categorically, I still don't know who I am. Mm. I don't. I mean, what I do know is that I have daily strategies and practices that connect me with who I am in that moment, this present moment of curiosity. Mm. Who am I? What do I need? How am I feeling? Mm. These are the ways that I recalibrate, because the version that I was 5 minutes ago is different than who I am right now. And so this becomes a mindfulness practice. This becomes an opportunity to go inward on a daily basis so that we can become curious and informed students of ourselves. And many of us who are outwardly directed, because, you know, we're stewards, right? We're community leaders. Yeah. We're leaders in our companies. We're leaders in our families. And this sounds self-indulgent and it sounds narcissistic. And yet I would challenge you to say, our knowledge of ourselves enables us to be the servants we need to be, enables us to keep our mess contained so that we know where we end and somebody else begins.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Right. Well, and it comes back to the example that we often hear about, you know, even the proverbial, you know, put the mask on yourself first in order to help anyone else.
Yep.
You know, it's not about being selfish. It's about, if you don't have enough oxygen, you can't do anything for anyone else. So
that's right.
So
yeah.
And you know, when I hear you say, well, I don't really know who I am. And it's like, well, you know, I get the feeling that comes from this notion of, why would I create, you know, labels for who I am? Those are really externally driven in many ways. You know, what I'm hearing is that you are living in a state of open and curious. And it doesn't mean that you're going to really look like somebody else. And I don't mean physically, but I mean, you know, your behaviors are going to change overnight, but you're going to notice what's going on around you and within you and respond accordingly. And so it's not about knowing, it's about being able to be aware and responsive, it sounds like.
Yeah, no, I mean, here's the thing. I label clear containers. Like, I love a labeled world. Like,
Could you come to my house?
Yes, I love doing that. I work my clients through that because I do think a chaotic environment contributes to a chaos.
Oh, definitely.
But the label, I found myself, whenever I put labels on, there's a sense of relief. And yet there's a sense of containment and entrapment too. Because whenever I get settled into a label, life disrupts me in a way that challenges me to just say, oh yeah, we're going to take that label away from you. We're going to knock you to your knees so that you can understand it isn't about that, that we got to let go of that. And we've got to become students of ourselves and also be fluid and authentic. We can also, in doing so, bust out from this limited belief that taking care of ourselves is selfish. Like, we need to pave the way. We need to show the way,
right,
for the next generation who is still caught up in the story, this dysfunctional myth that self-care is selfish.
And I would add to what you're saying and say, we need to actually show even our peer generation
some of that.
Because, you know, there's a lot of people who are really, you know, still trying to, I think, satisfy some external or perception of what these external standards or guidelines are. And it's not really working all that well for a lot of people. But I want to get to, I want to find out, I feel like now I know this little Katie a little bit, you know, and this little Katie who read The Road Less Traveled as a kid and, you know, was making to-do lists. What were her career goals or aspirations? What did she do in high school? What did she do after high school? I'd love to hear about your career journey, how that played out.
Well, I was so blessed to go to an all-girls Quaker school in Providence, and in a class of 40, it was cool to be curious. It was cool to learn. I was free. I mean, I felt free in a way that I hadn't experienced before. And to this day, I'm 56 now, and my classmates are my closest friends.
Oh,
I
how
am,
nice.
Really, 3 times a week, I'm in contact with one of them. I was very distracted by boys. I mean, where do you think the boys came? They came to girls' schools, but day in and day out, it was so nice to really focus on being a student and having just those deep female connections, which is a huge part of my life throughout. And I was always organizing social activities and ways for my friends and I to get together. And I realized so many of these threads continue in my life. I went to Gettysburg College thinking I was going to Smith College. Got waitlisted until the end of August, and I was devastated to learn that I was going to Gettysburg. It wasn't a good fit for me. It was not a good fit. And so, but I decided I was going to study business, and it was one of the schools that had a business program. I wanted to follow my dad's footsteps. And yet in freshman year, I was sexually harassed by the economics teacher. And I was like, yeah, no, not, you know, so I immediately changed courses and went into philosophy of all things. And what I told myself is, I think, therefore I sell. I knew that there was going to be a career in selling in some ways. And this was, I think I have this sense of who I was, which was, I'm not somebody that can sit behind a desk. I am not somebody who does well being told what to do. That doesn't work for me so much. And I love a challenge, and sales made sense, but what form it was going to take, I had no idea. But I knew I loved magazines. As a little girl, I would read magazines. My mom would get Ms. Magazine, and I would find that fascinating. And I would cut out images, and we call it a vision board now, but for me, it was just a collage of inspiring words. I mean, it makes so much sense that I do what I do. All these inspirational things, trying to fix myself, you know, because I just felt wrong and all of the things that we talked about before. So I ended up, graduating from college after spending a year abroad, and I, went to a graduation party for my brother from medical school within a month of my graduating from college. And I met the man who was to become my husband.
Wow.
But not part of the plan. I was going to go to New York City. I was going to work for a publication selling ad space in New York City. And then I met my husband, now of 35 years. And he said to me, you know, I'm leaving for San Francisco in a month. And I, he left in a month. We dated, saw each other every single day before then. And I worked at my dad's factory and wore a hairnet and sterilized syringes to make enough money to buy a round trip ticket to San Francisco, where my husband was doing a internship.
Mm.
And I moved to San Francisco a month after he did. And,
wow.
I know. That's what my parents said. That went over well.
I bet.
Catholic girl from New England. But I knew I followed my heart, and I wasn't willing to wonder what if. And so we got engaged very quickly within a matter of a couple of months. And I got a job at San Francisco Magazine, and I sold advertising space for restaurants in San Francisco, which was perfect. It was the bottom of the rung. I made $12,000 a year. I stayed there for a year and then graduated to a more sophisticated style and home magazine in San Francisco. And then really professionally arrived working for Time Magazine, selling advertising in 45 national publications, Business Week, Forbes, Fortune, People, InStyle, Sports Illustrated. And that was, I was there in San Francisco in that capacity.
Oh, wow.
And then we moved to Germany. So the Army paid for medical school for my husband. He went to Tufts Medical, but the Army paid for it. So we were off in Germany for 3 years. And so I left my job at Time Inc. and in 2 months learned the German language so I could start working in some capacity. And I got hired by Ernest and Giulio Gallo to sell wine for them throughout Bavaria. We had a blast. And then 3 years later, moved back to the States where my husband worked in the Seattle area. And I worked again for Time Inc., who hired me back. And I started up that office, the Seattle and all the Pacific Northwest office. And then our move was to Rochester, New York, where my husband wanted to do a fellowship. And in it was supposed to be a year. And we arrived and I thought, okay, I'm done following you all over the world. It's my turn. I want to go back to New England. But we ended up in Rochester and we ended up there for 14 years.
Oh my goodness.
I know, not part of the plan, but Time Inc. hired me to open up that office. So I worked for Time Inc. in all of upstate New York and also Toronto. And we also found a house that was designed by Frank Lloyd Wright. And my husband dropped to his knees and begged to live in art. So we bought the house that was in foreclosure and we tended to it for 14 years. And so there were so many, like, life does not go in the direction that you plan, but the thread throughout was my career was everything to me. Like, it was how I defined myself, but it made me sick. There was no off button. And in sales, that is often the case. I'd be at the top of the sales chart, but I sold more than ad pages. I sold my soul. Yeah. I traded my health for that coveted place at the top of the sales list, even though I was in the smallest market in the country. I was one of the top five performers because I was relentless in my pursuit to excel. Mm. And that came at a cost. I became ill and became depressed. I got to the point where my body broke down and my mind followed shortly thereafter. Mm. And
this was when you were in Rochester?
Or? Yeah. Yeah. It was, I became suicidal.
I didn't
know how to stop. And I really thought the only way was for me to be stopped completely.
Wow.
And I couldn't figure it out. I didn't know how, what that would look like. I was afraid of blood. I was afraid of doing a drug overdose. I mean, I didn't even take aspirin, so I didn't even know what that would look like. I was afraid of becoming a vegetable. Like, this is how desperate I was, because there was no end to my to-do list. And I knew, like, I will never get it all done. And I came undone.
Mm. Wow.
So I, with the love and support of my husband, I made the decision to quit my career because I couldn't figure out another way. I couldn't change myself. And I know the workplace wasn't going to change. They, you know, they wanted me to perform. They paid me to perform. And I couldn't perform anymore.
Yeah.
Without really doing excruciating. Actually, it was the point where I couldn't perform at all.
Yeah.
I had hit the wall.
Yeah. So it sounds like this was a buildup over time that it reached a certain point where you hit the wall. Like,
yeah.
Like it was, it wasn't like there was one thing that triggered it or that, you know, just over the years you were producing, and then you ran out of fuel and it really just took a toll on your soul and your whole being.
Well, when someone doesn't feel like she is enough, she will often compensate by doing too much. And that is what I did. That was my response. My response to life, my carving a place in the world. But I also had had a number of traumas throughout my life that led me to live neck up. I had been molested multiple times. I had been raped. I had been physically abused at different times. And all I knew was to how to hang out in my head and to disconnect from my body.
Yeah.
And my body, in its true wisdom, gave me so many signs, so many messages that said, hello. It was coming in the form of, you know, digestive issues and anxiety and, asthma and allergies and pneumonia. I'd have all these ailments with my body begging me to take the elevator down, to inhabit it again, to hear and heed the calls, to slow down, to rest and repair. But if I had to get out of my head, and frankly, I see this all the time, whatever the cause might be, but often it is some sort of abuse where we check out of our body and we head up. But a lot of it is just, it's a coping strategy. And if I had really had the skills to be able to settle into the moment, to settle into my life, to settle into my body, I would have felt the waves of suffering that I tried to keep at bay from doing. And when we see people who are addicted to doing, and I know my tribe, right? We may not use those words, but if we can't say no, right? People say, oh, I can't say no. It's like, oh, honey, you are saying no. It's just to yourself. That's what happens. If we are so busy and engrossed in our to-do lists and our tasks and being martyrs and rescuing other people and being there for everybody else and denying our own needs, you know, really martyring out, we never have to feel our own suffering. Right. And the fact is, we cannot outrun our pain through busyness. I've tried very hard. It does not work.
Yeah.
Thankfully, it doesn't work.
Right. And I can imagine that there were times over the years where the thought occurred to you that I can't keep outrunning this.
Absolutely.
But then you would shut it down again and then get back into doing. Like, it wasn't like you had to hit bottom to really see this. I'm imagining you saw it many times over the years and then kind of shut the door on it and kept going.
Well, when I would see it, what I would tell myself is like, what's your problem? Don't be a wimp. Like, I would just like, oh no, not on my watch. No. Just get back up, suit up, do what you got to do. I didn't have a lot of compassion for my humanness, right? And I see this over and over again, the human doing bit, like I didn't respect my needs. They felt like inconveniences. If like I would travel, I was driving all over the place. And if I had to go to the bathroom, it would be like, oh my God, but I'm going to be late for a sales call, or I didn't plan for that. So I wouldn't drink water because I didn't want to have to go to the bathroom and pull over. I mean, that kind of like, I wouldn't stop for lunch unless it was a lunch meeting. So I would grab candy bars. My sugar addiction started very early as a kid. Like when life feels bitter, we gravitate towards sugar, right? Sugar is so sweet, but life felt bitter for me. And I was trying to fuel the pace that was unsustainable. And so I gravitated towards what I knew, and I would binge on candy, shove the candy wrappers under the car seat of my company car and keep going. And of course I was going to have the physical ailments that came with that level of self-neglect, of course. And thank goodness I did, right? Because that was the only way. So yes, I had to hit rock bottom. I had to hit the only way out is to be permanently out. That's all I could come up with in my despair, because I knew I can't do it anymore. And I had this idea that there's this, you know, have it all together club. And I was a member. And now I not only didn't have it all together, I had nothing together. I was falling apart. And so I didn't know how to live like that. So I didn't want to live at all.
When you reached that point, you got help at that point, I'm assuming. And
I went on some medicine, and within 2 weeks felt dramatically different. And it was an arrangement I made with my husband, who said, look, we're going to try medicine for 2 weeks. If it doesn't work, we'll figure out what's next. And within 2 weeks, I not only cleared my mind, but conceived my son.
After
trying for years, there was no room in my life for a child, but I kept thinking, what's wrong with me? Why aren't we having a child? Well, there was metaphysically, emotionally, spiritually, in every way, there was no room for a child. And when I made the decision to quit, to heal myself, it was a matter of weeks before I conceived my son.
Wow.
Yeah. Life's funny that way.
Yeah, that is really remarkable. Now, this is a side question, but
yeah.
So the Germany to Seattle to Rochester, was your husband in the service this whole time?
Yes, yeah. Okay. So he's a doctor and the Army paid for medical school. So we went to Tufts Medical School and then the Army pays for all of it. So we were in the military throughout
the whole
time.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
Until the Rochester move. Yeah.
Oh, until, and then he was.
He's a civilian and was doing a fellowship. Yeah.
Got it. Okay. I just wanted to clarify
our duty.
That.
Yeah. We fulfilled our duty in the military.
Understandable. Yes. Yeah. I just wanted to get that clear because, I talk regularly to people who are spouses of people doing military duty. And there are, there are a variety of challenges there, but I wanted to just get that piece clear. So there you were, you had hit way bottom and thought, this is it. I'm done, in more ways than one.
Peace out. Yeah.
And then got some help, and conceived your son. And it must've been like life just took on a whole new view, a whole new meaning at that point.
I'd love to say that's the case. I will say that I was getting help throughout all of this time. But the therapy for me, it was like, fix me so that I can get more done.
I was wondering about that. Yeah, like
the child, of course, I was absolutely, and my husband's a psychiatrist for the record. So
that makes it even more interesting.
Right. So, I was in therapy throughout, but my mindset was, I'm broken. Fix me. Cause this is a distraction, not I'm broken and please heal me from my addiction to doing this. That was not my intention at all. And so I really had to shift. When I'm committed to personal growth, it is one of my highest held, if not my highest held values. But it doesn't have to come. The catalyst doesn't have to be suffering every time. It doesn't have to be pain. It can be, we can be, and it doesn't have to be because we're broken. It can be because we're curious about our potential. Mm-hmm. And I needed to make that shift so that I could explore and have fun getting to know myself in a new way. So here I am. I'm now pregnant. And I would love to say that like the light bulb went off and I was totally transformed. But all I did was take that professional perfectionism and transfer it to motherhood. I was obnoxious. I was the mother everybody hates, who was, everything was made from scratch. I was just everything organic, everything soft, everything clean, everything like, I became a full-time mom. And I love that. That was such a privilege. And I understand that. But boy, did I hold myself to that level of perfectionism again, that became very punishing. Mm. And I had to get sicker again. I then developed ulcerative colitis, pneumonia, shingles, while my father since died at when my son was three. And then when my son was five, I developed all these conditions again. And they happened when I went on a Zen meditation retreat. Cause I was like, you know what, just like you said earlier, I'm like, I've studied meditation for decades. I'm going to learn it. I'm going to master it. I'm going to go to a Zen hard ass retreat and I'm going to learn how to meditate. 5 days silent meditation retreat.
Yeah.
To go from the pace
and
of
I'm
my
gonna,
life.
And I'm going to ace it, right?
Yeah. I am going to become enlightened, right? And like day one and all this stuff. And of course, that's when the lining of my colon packed its bags and left, literally fell out of me while I was during the meditation retreat.
Wow.
The very fear of the silence, right? The singer Pink sings, "The quiet scares me because it screams the truth." And here is where we bump up against that perfectionism, that busyness, that addiction to doing meets silence. And whenever I ask my clients to get quiet, even for a moment, the resistance is shocking. Mm-hmm. Like, the resistance to it is shocking, and the tears fall. We don't know how to be in our own company. We don't know how to be still, how to show reverence for our own presence.
But what did you learn at that time? Because I could see where you might have still said, see, I'm broken.
Yeah. Oh, I definitely went there. But what I did is actually ask for help. I had to get help. I had a child and my husband was working and I was on bed rest. I had to recover. So the neighbors that I had always shoveled their walkways in a snowstorm, brought baked goods, the bounty of my garden, all of a sudden they showed up for me. And they were walking my son around the neighborhood. They were making meals for me. The level of reciprocity was breathtaking. And I learned that giving is not the only way. Giving actually has an edge of selfishness when we don't allow ourselves to receive. So the martyrdom bit had come back. And I had realized that I have to change my life. I have to learn how to receive with the same grace that I was giving. And yet the giving was with this frenzy. Tell me I'm enough, that I've done enough. Let me earn your respect. Let me earn, right, full circle back to that childhood story. And here I was, like, receiving in a way out of desperation, but it taught me that I had to do differently. Look, I will always love being busy. I will always love doing
things. And there's
nothing
wrong with that. Like, there's a lot of things you're naming here about living a full life, a productive life, to-do lists, all those things, you know, clear containers with labels. There's nothing wrong with any of that.
Unapologetic. Yeah.
Right. Nothing wrong with any of that. It's the frameworks and the rules and all the constraints that you put around that and what that did.
It's the how, right? How you do it.
And the mindset that you put around it, right? And how you held yourself up to these standards of perfection or, expected yourself to, you know, and really deemed yourself unworthy of anything less than that.
Yes, that's right.
So even though you had these high standards, you were really holding yourself to a very low standard because you kept telling yourself how broken you were.
Well, and to the lowest standard was then how I took care of myself. And this is, you know, we high achievers have exceptionally high standards as a general rule. And yet we really, we tolerate mediocrity when it comes to self-care. Mm. It's the thing that on our to-do list that can keep cascading to the bottom because it's private. It's between us and us. And we're used to breaking our words to ourselves. We're used to not keeping promises to ourselves. We think we can get away with it until we can't.
Right.
And we can't. And it might come in a crack of just a sense of no longer having this peace of mind. The sense of like, I just can't do it anymore, but I don't know what it looks like to be on the other side of it.
Right. Right. Yeah. And I think that's a good point, is what does that look like? And I'm also curious, you know, because you said something about this a few minutes ago about, you know, that it's not like you didn't have therapy or that you didn't get some external help. And yet it still wasn't really for many, many years, wasn't really penetrating. It wasn't, you weren't taking hold of some of these realizations. Now you were on bed rest, you were getting help from neighbors, you were realizing that you had to learn to receive. Was that something that you realized completely on your own, or did you have any help to help you kind of really internalize that and realize?
Well, I mean, my husband is my greatest, dearest advocate and friend. And he knew that the way that I was navigating life wasn't working, clearly. Mm-hmm. I mean, and expressed a lot of concern. But, you know, I therapy has a role, and I have deep respect for therapy and in certain contexts.
Sure.
And for me, it gave me a ton of insight, but it did nothing in terms of implementation. Uh-huh. And so I studied a lot. Every book on my nightstand was self-help books because I was trying to fix myself, trying to make sense of myself. But the fact was, I wasn't implementing. I mean, even at the time, like ever, I've been plant-based for 35 years. Like I've studied nutrition, a deep passion for nutrition. And yet, you know, shoving candy bars to try to fuel my inhumane expectations of myself. So it's one thing to have insight. It's another thing to implement it. So,
right.
So receiving help, asking for help and not being ashamed to do it. But the next lesson was implementation and self-study with the perspective of like, who am I? Like, what time do I need? I start studying my habits, right? This was the rock bottom, by the way. This, I'd finally hit rock bottom. And I realized that rock bottom actually has a basement. So this was the basement of rock bottom. Uh-huh. And it was like, okay, I've got to study my habits because I have to be well. And I couldn't be well for myself yet, but I could be well for my son. And I could be well because I needed to be there for him. I wanted to be well for my husband.
Yeah.
I hadn't quite gotten to the point where I could be, being well for myself was enough. Mm-hmm. So I used that loyalty and devotion to them as a catalyst to get me, in the direction I needed to be. So I started studying, what time do I need to go to bed so that I'm at my best? So that when I'm not snarly in the morning, what do I need to eat so that I'm thriving and not surviving, not striving, but thriving? I started going habit by habit by habit, implementing all these things, using this mindfulness practice, but with compassion and curiosity instead of intensity. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, I worked my buns off, but what I learned was I created a what I call a womb manual of what it takes for me to be me. And that's what I do in my concierge coaching. Like, we have to study ourselves. And at the end, like when we really study ourselves, we have a choice. We either act in alignment to what we've learned about ourselves or we don't. And if we don't, we're not doing it out of ignorance. We actually like, I don't do well having alcohol. It doesn't work for me. It sets me up for my sugar stuff.
Yeah.
It sets me up for the binging of sugar. My sleep gets disrupted. I don't want to work out. It all falls apart for me.
Yeah.
So the fact is, if I have a glass of wine, I have now said, you're probably not going to work out tomorrow. You're probably like, I've made a decision that, and I'm fully aware of what the consequences are. I don't make that decision anymore. I don't drink because I'm not willing to compromise the next day. I'm not willing to undermine the next day. And now I'm doing it with clarity. It's not deprivation at all.
Right,
I don't want to deprive myself of feeling great the next day. We now have a plan that's not outside in, it's inside out.
Right.
And we're living it because we like who we are, we like how we feel, and we're gravitating towards feeling fabulous, which is what we do.
Yeah. So I'm loving all of this, of course. And so you were, you know, let's say full-time parenting, full-time doing self-care, being all you could be there for your son and your husband, and really starting to pay attention to some things. How did that evolve to you becoming a coach, an entrepreneur, a speaker, all the things that you're doing now? And you developed this amazing planner and program. I mean, people have to go check it out on your website to see what we're talking about here. But how did that all come about?
It was a vow that I vowed that if I could heal myself, that I would return to my tribe of doers and I would teach them how to be.
Mm-hmm.
I had to figure this out on my own. Nobody's talking to this population in a way that says, look, I respect that you want to get things done and that you want to leave a legacy. But you're running on fumes.
Right.
So what's possible when you're nourished? That's what I became curious about. If you're able to accomplish all that when you're fried, what happens when you're truly nourished? And I'm going to help you figure that out. And then I went to school to get the certifications to legitimize the work that I wanted to do. And I would say in reference to your audience around career, what became clear to me at this point was I will never go back to the sexual harassment that I knew in my industry, the sense of powerlessness, the sense of little girl proving herself. I didn't want to answer to anybody else but myself. I was done. I was going to create an environment that wasn't toxic, but was nourishing. And I was going to walk my talk and I was going to protect and advocate for myself in a way that I didn't know how to do in an institution or an environment. So I was going to craft it myself. I did become my worst boss at times. I was replicating some of the same patterns. So I had to check back again and say, wait a minute, we're just not going to create what we left. We're going to actually do this differently. Mm-hmm. And I knew what I wanted to do. I knew the work that I had to do. I knew that I wanted to leave a mark in the world. And the way that I had to do it was to get back to these high achievers and to help enable them, empower them, inspire them to become intentional and deliberate about how they lead. And I crafted a business based on who I am, how I want to lead. And frankly, you know, my primary responsibility was still as a mom. And so it started as a hobby and then transformed into when I realized, wait a minute, all the skills that made me so good at what I did in my professional corporate life, I can bring in a new way. I can recalibrate and bring it to this work so that I can lead mm-hmm. and break the generational cycle of self-neglect.
Right.
And that was my duty.
You said you went for a certification. I know you've probably gotten several certifications, but was there a specific certification or a group of certifications that you got that you found were particularly helpful or that you did at that time that really were kind of like that was one of your first steps towards, you know, what you part of your, let's say, implementation phase?
I don't mean to be glib about this, but I really felt like the greatest value I had was the decades of self-study mm-hmm. and the commitment to all of these philosophies, all of these modalities mm-hmm. That I studied for so long.
Yeah.
And then the self-study through the implementation bit, like literally mm-hmm. studying myself as well as self-taught. Right. Yeah. But I also took a ton of courses around it. Nutrition was my primary goal because what I understood and I wasn't seeing elsewhere in conversations about productivity and high achievers and leaders was anyone talking about what are you doing when you're not at work? How are you feeding yourself?
Right.
That's not being talked about even to this day. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, what was clear to me is like, I've got to learn. And I've got to teach and inspire people to say like, look, I am fueling my day. I am fueling a mindset that's going to make or break the level of success I have in this day.
Right.
And so it was really important that I start all my clients. I work first on food, because if you're in a food coma, or if you're like fueled on sugar and on a sugar high, I can't get through to you.
Right.
I am never going to tap into your potential if you're not fed in a way that like gets to the whole of you, mm-hmm. that really nourishes you. If mm-hmm. you're deprived of the nutrients that you need, forget it. What you create is a fraction of what your possibility is. So getting to a personalized, not me saying, here's my plan, but a personalized way of approaching nutrition, then I can get into all the other areas, food, thought, and time. Those, you know, what is me management, right? And mm. and the time management, literally the word time has the word me in it. Mm. So I believe time management is about me management. How do I manage myself, right?
Totally
because
agree.
We all get 24 hours, but how am
That's
I managing
right.
myself within that time?
Yep.
That's the work. That's the opportunity for growth.
Mm-hmm.
So food,
Absolutely.
Thought, how are we managing our minds? This is what became fascinating to me. And what was clear is like, it's all about strategies. And mm-hmm. I used to have so much judgment. Like if I was like, oh, you must have 8 glasses of water. You must go to bed and get 8 hours of sleep and all this stuff. It's like, okay, well, the fact is, if I'm not doing that, there's an obstacle here. What's the obstacle? Well, it's an outside in solution and I need an inside out. So there's some obstacle. What is that obstacle? We take the judgment out. We become curious observers like a reporter in our own lives. We start tracking our habits and we gain insight. And when we know, we're unstoppable. We know how to get things done. That's
right.
who we are.
Right.
Your audience are doers. So we know how to do this, but have we ever taken all those skills and directed it towards ourselves? No.
No,
we
because
outsource it. We
right,
just
well,
it.
But that's what we've been taught to do, right?
Yes.
That's what our culture really nourishes and yeah, absolutely.
Yep.
That's how
especially women.
And that's
right?
how we sell potato chips and soda and all mm-hmm. those other things,
that's
right?
That's right.
Right.
That's right.
So tell us about the the planner and the program and be nourished?
So I have a concierge coaching program and it's a 6-month program. I've tried to do it. People are like, I want a 90-day. I want tough tootsies. Like, this is what works. And the results are phenomenal, mind-bending results. And so I'm, you know, my job is, you know, you come to me because life isn't working the way you want. You feel overwhelmed. It's not like my job is to get you from here to there. We have an idea of where we want to go. My job is to close that gap. And so that you never need me again. That's my goal. You never need me again because you become that self-empowered, self-informed force to be reckoned with, right?
Yeah.
And that makes you, no matter what comes your way, you know who you are, you know what you need to do, and you know how to get back on your path when you veer, because you will. There will be something that will push you off. I'll be the one pushing you off in the 6 months, but then we learn how to get back. So there's that. But I developed a planner because since I've been 8, I've been obsessed with planners, but none of them were, this was my frustration. And every year I'd get a couple new ones and be like, I'm going to play with it. I'm going to, I can't do just the digital. I need the evidence supports, the research supports writing. So I know that. And it's a valid, proven technique, but, none of them were beautiful enough for me. I needed it to be beautiful because I wanted to interact with it. If I don't want to interact with it, then I won't.
That's right.
I think the planner, a planner, a journal, whatever your tool is a access to your higher self. My higher self sets the agenda once a week. This is what we're going to do this week. Mm-hmm. My higher self, the night before I leave my office, says, this is what we're going to do tomorrow. Mm-hmm. It's not the person who's tired or grumpy or snarly or didn't get enough sleep. It is my higher self that lays that out. And then in the morning, I check in with myself and say, okay, this is what I set up. What do I need? Has anything changed? What do I need? Let me check in with myself. Do I need to renegotiate this contract with myself?
Mm-hmm.
Because it is designed to keep your word to yourself. If you say you're going to do something, if you consistently blow yourself off, you have eroded the trust you have in yourself. And my work is about repairing that trust. Mm-hmm. So I needed it to be beautiful. I needed there to be a level of self-accountability. I have that woven throughout where we set those goals in 90-day windows, because that's research supported in terms of how we can leverage the energy that we have. But most importantly, I needed to have respect for our human needs. And I had never seen, I either saw ones that were froofy and cute and didn't respect the drive and ambition that we have, or they were so much so, I'm like, who's doing the laundry? Like, who's working out? What are you going to eat today? So I've woven all the elements of my coaching practice into this. And what my clients say over and over, like, I feel like you're in my head. Like, I open the planner and it's like, this is exactly in alignment with the commitment that we have to ourselves and the work that we do.
It's that sort of consistent intentionality and being deliberate about what you're doing. It's not about being right all the time or doing, there's nothing about perfection in here. It's just about really staying connected to yourself and understanding why you're doing what you're doing in the moment, and then projecting outward to what that might look like over the week and checking in with yourself and giving yourself some grace and space at the same time, right?
I love that. I mean, this is the muscle of consistency is the most underused all of our muscles. And this is what we're talking about. And here's the thing. We show up for people all the time. This is what we do, but do we show up for ourselves? And so sometimes in my planner, I've got like 3 words on it. I don't need to like cure cancer every day. This is not what I'm doing. I mean, if I had the skills, that wouldn't that be?
But
like what I'm saying, it's like, sometimes it's just a few words, but it's how I plug in again, because we have amnesia. We are distracted minds, and we need to be pulled back in, or else bring us back in, let us get grounded again. And the word deliberate has, and this isn't the study of the word, but the word liberate is in deliberate.
Oh yeah.
So for so many of us, you might be hearing me go, oh, she's so uptight and she's so anal. And of course she's going to, here's the thing. Structure sets us free.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so what kind of structure do we need to hold ourselves accountable to the highest version of ourselves? And some days the highest version of ourselves is we're curled up in a ball, and that's the highest version. They're literally on the 3 things I want to accomplish for today. Some days it's laundry. Like It's okay. Mm-hmm. It's the context and considerations, what's happening around us that allows us to assess what our capacity is, because mm-hmm. we are entering every day with total disrespect for our energy levels,
yeah.
for our emotional capacity, only tethered to these external demands, but no reference to ourself and to the context and considerations of our lives. Yeah. And when we start learning that sense of compassion and checking in with ourselves in a deliberate, intentional way,
right.
The bottom line is when we're consulted, the wisdom is there. This is a moving exploration,
right.
but the curiosity
right.
is what needs to be there. And the deep, profound respect
right.
Even the respect for the parts of us that just feel messy.
Yeah.
The parts of us that still want to, you know, knock on the door of the have it all together club, which by the way, does not exist. I look under the hood of the people that would intimidate most of us. And it's like, oh, you're just as messy as I am.
Right.
You are just like, welcome. You are the human being,
right.
Just like the rest of us.
Right.
And so
Absolutely.
That's part of us owning that.
Absolutely. Yeah. So if people would like to learn more about your work or find you, what is the best way for them to do that? And of course, we will include, a lot of links and things in the show notes.
I'd encourage you to schedule a complimentary 30-minute session. Go on my website, benourished.com, BNOURISHED.com, and schedule a complimentary session. Certainly sign up for my newsletter. And connect via LinkedIn. I'm resurrecting that social media presence.
Great.
And then if you're interested in hiring me as a speaker, I have a keynote presentation called Self-Care Isn't Selfish. It is your duty. And I encourage you to go on katiemcdonaldspeaking.com, where the Great. Details of that, or on Be Nourished.
Great. So one last question, and that is, so as you know, we like to give people a little bit of wisdom and advice from our guests about making transitions. And you have certainly worked your way through many. What would be a key piece of advice you would give someone who is looking at their what's next? What would be something you would advise them to be thinking about or doing as they step into their next steps?
So I want you to have a cup of tea.
Like, okay.
Literally boil from the moment you boil the water to the moment you take the last sip of that tea. I want you to sit in silence, and I want you to start beginning the habit of being in your own company and your own presence, repairing mm-hmm. the trust we have, igniting the curiosity in ourselves. Because if we don't, we are going to fall prey to repeating the same habits, the same proclivities of working the outside in. And what when we sit and have that tea, we're getting aware of what is within us. So that is the one thing. The other thing I would ask you to do is instead of quickly, you know, working at a place and being like, oh, I've got to go, this isn't work. Like, instead of leaving something, I would really ask you to say, have you checked in? Have you mastered boundaries? Have you mastered your own self-care? Because I would say a great percentage of the time, when clients come to me and they're like, oh, I've got to leave my job, it's just not working. I'm like, well, you know what? Before you do that, could we just master you a little bit better?
Mm-hmm.
Because we're playing a role in this. We're co-collaborators in the lack of boundaries. Mm-hmm. We're co-collaborators in the sense of depletion and exhaustion and resentment and lack of self-advocacy. So we're going to, like, I want you to master yourself. And then, because sometimes, a lot of times people end up staying where they are and they start thriving. They're getting paid significantly more.
Yeah.
Other times they're like, peace out. I've figured out myself. I've bumped up against the wall of this organization and I'm going to do my own thing, and or I'm going to advocate for myself elsewhere.
Well, on that lovely, lovely note, I want to thank you, Katie, for being here today. I think the listeners are going to really take a moment and really, if not more, and really be thinking about what they can do next to connect with themselves better.
Tammy, thank you. I am a fan. I'm a fan of your work and your philosophy and you as a human being. Thank you for doing this mission for all of us.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Well, I don't know about you, but I really enjoyed my conversation with Katie McDonald and was completely inspired learning about her early life, her transitions, and what she's doing in the world today. What is your key takeaway from our interview? If you are interested in any of the resources mentioned in today's podcast, you can find them in the show notes on my website at tammygulerloeb.com/podcast. Just look for episode 213. Are you anticipating your next professional move? Check out my award-winning book, Work from the Inside Out, Break Through 9 Common Obstacles and Design a Career That Fulfills You. It's available in paperback and ebook editions. Check them out on my website, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, independent bookstores, or through your local library. And if you were inspired by this episode with Katie, please share it with your friends and colleagues, and please do subscribe so you don't miss next week's show. Remember, subscribing is always free. If you're enjoying the podcast, I'd really appreciate reading your written review on Apple Podcasts. Just go to my website, tammygulerloeb.com/podcast. Click on the Apple Podcast button and follow the instructions provided there. You can also help sustain this podcast by treating me to a cup of coffee. Just go to buymeacupofcoffee.com/TammyGL. Since this podcast is self-funded, I would so appreciate your generosity and support. Thank you so much for listening. And remember, it's never too late or too impossible to increase your sense of fulfillment and satisfaction in your work and other meaningful activities. Let me know how it's going for you. I'd really love to hear from you. Bye for now.
Thank you for listening to the Work from the Inside Out podcast. For more information, you can find us at www.workfromtheinsideout.com.